Presumably, they're being made available to the general market out there. alla residenza da ricordare con lui.
The
Honourable Minister for Industrial Relations, Employment, Housing and Sport. Mr. Speaker, as at the 30th of October 2022, there are 11 government properties available for our country, all of which are currently under offer. These are 1 RTB, 1 2 RTB, 4 3 RTB, 3 4 RTB, 1 5 RTB, and 1 6 RTB. There are 28 properties of which have already been earmarked to applicants on the waiting list and are in the process of being refurbished. These are 3 1 RTB, 5 2 RTB, 1 to 11 3 RTB, and 9 4 RTB. There are a total of 30 properties categorized beyond repair, which within the housing stock, which will be put out to tender, and in 792 properties, which form part of the urban renewal project.
Take a look at the answer just given, Mr. Speaker, a bit more in terms of the 28 properties, when you said 28 properties, which is then broken down, which are currently basically on the repair, you know, identified by allocation, but they can't be allocated until they're in service. Can he give an indication, and I'm breaking them down, can he give an indication as to more or less, it's difficult because obviously each graph will have its own particular intricacies which can make them dealt with, but a broad indication as to when these are likely to be made available.
Mr. Speaker, as you all remember, it's very, very difficult to ascertain exactly how of the 28 at a time each one of them will take. I can remember that it is in the housing's interest to have it done as quickly as possible. But obviously, sometimes doing things quickly might not be of the standard that people expect. So it's a question of trying to balance out whether we take a little bit more time in refurbishing a flat, for example, and also it depends on the condition we get the flat back. It's very important because we are now doing different steps of trying to see that people at least return the flat somewhere near where they got it, because it's incredible how sometimes we get flat back.
Is that correct in terms of his reply to question 325 that the number is pretty low? I mean, does he have a comment to make a real expansion of his reply to the answer he's given? So, as I understand it, is that my note putting is accurate, there are 11 units available for allocation, and then he kind of categorizes the question the program on that basis. And 11 doesn't seem like that a lot if one considers the high number of individuals who are waiting for flats to be allocated, and certainly I think on this side of the house, I suppose I'm speaking rather both parties on the side of the house, we get a lot of the consistency work that we do get is pretty good housing, and people wait in some cases many, many years, and the very dire circumstances we need to be having. I think we just got that comment.
Mr. Speaker, the answer to the question is I gave you a date, the 13th of October, as of the 13th of October, because this is a known number. For example, from the 28th of October, I said that we now
not to be a total test as many numbers as already. So it is a moving number over time. And that's why I also say, when I answer the question, to put a bit. Because that means I'm not going to the real level. But we do our continuing every other week. So every other week we do our meeting where we allocate thousands of people. And sometimes we get 20, sometimes we get 10, it depends on how we return back. And I see where we return back. So it's not only all the time moving, and that's why I specifically gave a date. So basically, it wasn't the grand remember telling me, and that perhaps the question needs to be phrased in a different way. And that we want such a snapshot as at the 13th of October, he's telling us on that particular date, so where 11 slots available for allocation. If you're able to tell me that we have information or simply from experience that we may have done that job for some time, whether that is an acceptable number for that particular, or not for that particular date, has it changed in terms of the records, is more or less, is this analyzed on a weekly basis? I'm asking the question about where the rest of the scenario and how the system works, but if you could give some helpful comments in relation to that. Sometimes I'm very disappointed when I go to the allocation committee and I only have 700 to give. And the only way to have another 20 to give, so it's fluctuating. I cannot see the figure. What would I like? I would like to have 40, 50 every week, but I don't get them. What I'm saying is, so it depends on how quickly they recover and turn around. And people want movement from a PRKD to another PRKD, and that is the allocation we do, because it's not only allocating people in your houses, it's also changing people in your houses. And as I have explained in the house before, we basically change where family A wants to move to somewhere in the state B, and then we wait for that family, and at the end we get one house back. So there's a lot of movement all the time. These are probably the people that might be in the private sector or living with parents, so we allocate that specific house to a new person. So it's all the time moving. One week we might get one number, and as I said, all I'm trying to do is to have the turnover of houses quicker and better. That's the only way we can work so that people can then, we can make moves into this.
So, thank you for coming on the question.
This is a bit of a vague question, but over the years I've been going around the schools, especially during election time and stuff, and there have been many, many flats, like way more than the numbers that I'm hearing here, that have been empty, closed off, needing a rebound. And to me, it seems very little. I mean,
there are 2 reasons why the 28 is the 28 that we have that we have attempted are from the 13th of October. That's one thing. And second thing, there are a number of flats that are empty. And we cannot do anything about it. Because they were told by the GOP to the seven who subsequently have passed away and families are keeping their house. And we can't do anything at all. And that has been a big mistake in that the GOP found houses in the state and these houses are just empty. So for us, it's a house that we cannot do. Not only that, it's costing a lot of money to the government because you have to create a management company and you have to create the whole of the whole lot of reality because people own houses in business.
Correct.
and very many.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was just grabbing a pen to understand if the Minister could answer the process to obtain an appointment, the typical waiting time, and how often there is simply because I've been approached by constituents who want to see the Minister and are entered to ask appointment.
Whichever constituents go to the one or the other, want to see you. I can guarantee them that I see them next to them will take a month. But I usually see them within a week. So everybody else comes to me, my rectors, legal help, people as well, they can go there, they can make an appointment, and I usually do see them on the monthly clinic. The person has an appointment like that, and we will see them before. Next question. Question number 229 of 2022. The Honourable C.J. Phillips. The Honourable still quite on the first half of Vanderbilt announcements and how long the public will need to wait until it's reactivated. I'm going to the Minister for Transport. Mr. Speaker, the bus check of road access is very critical. As the every member of the country, the cutting service making 10 times greater as it relies on GPS technology and also telecommunication technology. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, the debate about company website has been under mention. And please provide the every member that my ministerial office has been working closely with the debate about company. And the website is now up with the general content under review. I'm hoping that once again, all the important information and notes and tables will be available shortly.
I'm wondering if I want to confirm how long the process is going to take for the
public. I believe that it's only a matter of days. I will be able to put an exact figure on that in a day. I'm not sure that I'm going to pass the body weight. If that information is important, I can definitely speak to that.
Question number 240 of 2022. The Honourable C.J. Phillips. The Honourable State's position on the implementation of the Park and Ride Scheme. Answer, the Honourable Minister for Transport.
The position of the government remains that the intent to develop a park and ride scheme at Phillips Highway Complex after fire and the runway has become operational. Further, the position of the government is considering implementation of a park and ride at other locations such as the old Earth Terminal site. These will be announced in the future. Question number 241 of 2022. To Andrew E. J. Phillips.
The Canada government spoke to all registered motorcycles and drove to high on their diesel, unleaded, hybrid, or electric, broken down into percentages.
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Transport. For the last discussion to deal with questions 343 and 343. Question number 342 of 2022. The Honourable Minister for
Transport. Of all registered thousands of over high on diesel, unleaded, hybrid, or electric broken down into percentage.
Question number 243 of 2022. The Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Can you demonstrate all registered commercial vehicles into over high on diesel, unleaded, hybrid, or electric broken down into percentage?
Answer, the Honourable Minister of Transport. The details are as follows. As regards to registered motorcycles, there are 0 diesel motorcycles, 15,334 petrol motorcycles, 0 hybrid motorcycles, and 100 electric motorcycles. And the percentages are diesel 0%, petrol 99.31% of the vehicles are petrol, 0% are hybrid, and 0.65% are electric. That we talked about the questions 1 and 41. We look at the third detail for registered cars. We have diesel, 600, so 6,000 and 98, which makes that 24.39%. Plus 17,289, which is 69.12%. Hybrid, 1,483, making that 5.92%. And electric, 115, compared with 0.46%. And finally, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to voting for commercial vehicles, there are 1,891 dealers, which make up 6.27%. There are 905 petrol, making up 31.77%. 500, which is 0.18%. And electric, 45, compared with 1.58%.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm grateful to the Honourable Minister for setting out those numbers. Without this question, because obviously we're attempting to test not only our community's appetite for electric and hybrid vehicles, but also the success, of course, of the government policy of moving people towards acquiring hybrid or electric vehicles, Mr. Speaker. And I know the Minister will recall a public statement made by I did think it was a very terrible moment there, but they suggested that acquisitions of hybrid electric vehicles was ranging around 65% as far as new vehicles. Will the Minister agree with me that there is a very, very long way to go for our community to transition to electric and hybrid vehicles? And what is the government doing further to persuade members of our community to do that, given the significant level of air pollution in our community?
Because the first thing that the supplier is going to go to by default, most of the people who are allowing to go to now are picking because are hybrid and by nature. So I expect the figures to increase to the quick now and to electric vehicles. I think there's a lot of things that people think about when they want to buy electric vehicles, not simply swapping one sort of vehicle like driven vehicles to electric vehicles, which take into consideration things like the engine size, people needing to use the car to go away on long distances, so we have to factor in when the next day that you have to charge your car, and you're going to avoid them, whether you choose your hotel that has electric charging, which needs to respect up on that. So when it comes to work for use, I think that it's a lot more potential because you can look quite around 400, 500 kilometers per electric car, and that seems like it's a local, but now that we move out, I think most of the Italians will use their cars in Spain when they ever have a chance to. So there are factors that deter people to buy electric. I think these things should be taken into account before we start saying that there's been a low take up effect because under the incentive on the road, people have their tax. About the taxi cashback assumed with and we can reduce the amount of cashback on hybrid and push it towards electric. With those incentives for people to set up their own electric charging points at home, which is exactly on that. So there are incentives in that respect.
The rising of success in Scotland is about the number. In terms, if you look at the commercial vehicles for one, and we all know we've debated in this house before the number of commercial vehicles that are pumping out diesel to this is very dodgy, grimy diesel. Of course, in other context, let's not go beyond that. But we have 1,191 commercial vehicles that are pumping out fumes onto our streets, Mr. Speaker. That's 66%. We have 31% of unleaded, Mr. Speaker. So 95% of our commercial vehicles in Gibraltar are polluting our environment, Mr. Speaker. And what are the minister doing to persuade businesses in our community to transit their fleet, their working fleet from diesel grinding vehicles, which you've characterized in the past, to in the different, more grueling aspect, that the supported effect of the secondary, the outcome of the conversation speaker. Is it right, therefore, I am asking this question, how is the best way to emphasize group integrity in respect of vehicle distance under these questions completely vary the speaker?
The speaker has never used the phrase that the honourable gentleman has attributed to. The phrase I have used is grimy, smelly, diesel. The abbreviation for which is GST. I'm afraid the class can take the number. Because the reason why I refer them to that is because they were going to establish not on any aspect that might relate to the vehicle, they were going to establish a power station that was going to be exclusively a diesel power station, and they were going to establish it in the nature of the grid. And it was going to be fighting grimy, smelly diesel into the nature reserve at the area of Jews Gate, which is people where people would be looking over the Straits of Gibraltar, one of the attractive views of the Straits of Gibraltar. And instead of seeing the view now of the Latin sports facility, which is open and operating, the fantastic green area there, and the Straits that would be seeing the fixed funnel spewing out grimy, smelly diesel. I said indeed, Mr. Speaker, just before I allow the Honourable Gentleman to the Honourable Minister to deal with other points that he might raise, what we did was we introduced a number of budget, different measures to stimulate people buying vehicles which were not diesel vehicles, to stimulate people buying hybrid vehicles, and to stimulate people buying electric vehicles. And those measures have been improved since they were first introduced and have attracted a considerable number of people, although not the sort of percentage that would have been attracted if we had provided even more incentives, Mr. Speaker. But honourable members constantly tell us that we spend too much money, so I'm surprised that they are encouraging us to enhance those incentives, because those are fiscal incentives, but it's also incentives based on money, Mr. Speaker. Money programmed by the government, that is, money not raised by the government. But, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Minister of Transport will be able to say more. Now, just looking at whether a vehicle is diesel or petrol is not enough. You have to look at the characteristics of the vehicle, whether it is diesel and hybrid, whether it is a Euro 6 engine, or whether it is an even more sophisticated engine, and look at the emissions. And over the Minister for Environment was reminding me the other day in the meeting which we were both attending, that actually the air quality in Gibraltar has never been better since we started to measure it. That is not to say that we don't want it to be even better, and that we don't want the traffic to not create problems of air pollution, however much less air pollution there is now. Any air pollution is air pollution that we need to be fighting against. So, Peter, with that, I just hope that the Honourable Gentleman will use today's exchanges to have now firmly in his mind that the reference is to grainy, smelly diesel, and that the local GFP remind me always of that.
This is not acceptable. I think the question that we should look at is
remember because we were telling these were coming our way. We had no individuals which was going well with sitting with your hand and I know when I was talking around them, you could feel the heat of the engine and the smell was coming out. And they all go to energy, they all test the same engine, and they had to go home with the emissions that they use at the basic manufacturer. And they then give the requirement for that engine. Now those are something that's extract. And instead of those extract engines with the emissions extremely low, not that I'm saying that it's perfect, it's good. But they are extremely good, and then you need to look at how you generate your source of electricity. And we have our engine, so it's a much cleaner form of electricity. But in other cities, in other countries, we have diesel in our power station, we have fuel in the form of electrical fuel to vehicles, which then doesn't know that in fact it's better to have diesel or to have. So I hope that will help a little bit more with the type of question I have.
Yes.
I would like to wait for the Chief Minister to clarify what, in his view, the ground inside of diesel was. The Honourable Minister gave us the statistics of registered cars in Gibraltar, of which there were 24% of diesel vehicles and 69.1% of petrol vehicles. In the circumstances, does not agree that it's more likely that there are the grand smelly leather petrol or GSLP in fact in Gibraltar. Well, Speaker, given that one of the things which we did not know that we were elected was take the GSB Jaguar that cost at the time £85 to fill the petrol, and instead bought an electric vehicle. I'm saying to you, the Speaker, I'm so very overjoyed from the 7th of the Griffin, because I'm so nervous, having realized that we were the ones who took action to lead by example, and having forgotten that, as we went to trials and told people that they're relevant, it cost £80 to fill the Jaguar with petrol at the time. And of course, in the region of ACP to buy the Tesla battery for a full charge of 400 kilometers, the GSLP liberal led in demonstrating that electric vehicles work. And the electric vehicles could work in the Gibraltar environment in particular. And we made the official vehicle of the Chief Minister an electric vehicle instead of the vehicle that consumed the most petrol per kilometre of any class at the time. And so, no, I don't think that we will go down in history in that way. I think they will be the ones who will always now have the difficulty of trying to establish themselves as having any environmental credentials, given what their plans were, and given how they were going to finance those plans. That's why, because I'm concerned, Grimes and Weaver is the way that they will be remembered, and that will be their legacy in terms of what they promised they were going to do for our children and their ability to generate electricity. Work together with the Ministry of Transport, in the transition of forms of transport. I think that we are in the government to them is only a limited consequence because the industry is moving in such a way that it will, within the next decade, be very difficult to get anything other than an electric vehicle, so people will have to withstand on stage. But the interest of government, apart from the things that the early center said, is taking a number of steps. It's encouraging businesses to engage with electric vehicles, and the number of meetings and the websites that we have with the pilots that are introducing some of these vehicles. We're also studying the possibility of the use of hydrogen as a fuel, which seems to be the future of a good vehicle, where electric batteries may be too heavy in order to be efficient. So that's another option. And finally, the honourable members might be keeping aware of the media. The net zero delivery body, which is chaired by my friend and colleague, the Deputy Chief Minister, one of the subcommittees, and also the American Conservation member, one of the subcommittees, which has broad representation within the public service and elsewhere, is actually looking very carefully at the transition of transport into water. So, any suggestions that we have given to really shows that the members of this are not keeping up with what is actually happening in Gibraltar.
Because there is an exchange in the size, of course. So the current legality
all these speakers on our street. And the last time I asked this question, the former transport minister was unsure whether it was legal or illegal, and I think that was ventilated, and we didn't really get to the bottom of it. Has the minister now got to the bottom of the current position, legal position, as to the use of these speakers currently in Gibraltar?
Thank you. the owner or driver of a car for an open committed a road traffic offence
in this jurisdiction is each of the last 5 words deepened in the jurisdiction to which the request was made. After that, the Honourable Minister for Transportation. Mr. Chairman, we now see this answer. I've been speaking with the driver, both the Legislative Department and the Gibraltar Legislative Authority, and the bank. They are present with your vehicle identification, but only vehicle directly with any foreign jurisdiction. The Gibraltar Legislative Authority shares the vehicle identification information with the UK. Only in France, the vehicle goes to other jurisdictions. As for every member, it is everywhere, the Gibraltar driving driver vehicle identification authority shares information, or shares information, up until the 31st December 2021, with the UK via the UK platform. Mr. Speaker, with respect, I don't think it means quite answer the question, maybe you misunderstood it. The previous question was about foreign authority asking for assistance of the Gibraltar Authority. This is about the Gibraltar authorities asking for assistance of foreign authorities, whether it goes to London or otherwise, it's immaterial. So I'm asking how many times in the last five years, have the Gibraltar authorities sought assistance from a foreign jurisdiction in relation to a road traffic offence committed in this jurisdiction? I have asked the question before, and I think the answer was that there haven't been any requests. And I asked the question a number of years ago, and I just wanted to see what the difference is now. I guess we have left this platform a number of years ago, so in that respect, there would have been no change. No, with respect to your permanent answering the question. My question is about the last 5 years, Mr. Speaker. It's about 5 years, and I'm asking the last 5 years. So we entered the system in January 2021. That's a year and 9 months. So it's still a period of time before that you did have available access to the system, and I'm asking, in that period, I know that after January 2021, it couldn't happen, but prior to January 2021, for that balance, those 5 years, how many times has the Gibraltar Authority asked for the assistance of a foreign jurisdiction? And what I'm talking about is that there has been no change in respect of the answer he was given, which he said he asked a couple of years ago. I think he might have asked it about then. A couple of years ago, I thought it might have been about then, and the answer was no change. The independent prosecuting authorities would be the one who would have requested this information to not appear to have requested this information. This is also not simply odd that prior to January 2021, there had been 416 requests by foreign jurisdiction of the Gibraltar Authority
about to be treated by a police officer who used speed guns. Police officers who use speed guns don't mean to rely on you. Cars are not a platform to determine the identity of the person who's doing the speeding, because they set the vehicle, the person's details are taken, and they're held on the spot. So there's no need to make a request for the information. So what happened instead? Maybe a court has a speed gun, the police officer would check you, you will give your details, and they would not be a request for your details to your car. But of course, if we would work with this film, there are many more speed cameras that are on the border. It is the speed camera that identifies only the registration mark of the vehicle, which then leads to a requirement to obtain the details of the ownership of the vehicle behind the registration mark. Here, we've had a lot less speed cameras for a shorter period, and that might be why the President and the Defense Authority have not had to seek the information or have not sought to seek the information.
Question number 347 of 2022. The Honourable Ms. Andrew Hassan-Lyon.
Will the government answer in the sense that the best studies will continue to be served out for the Gibraltar terrorism?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Transport. It is the government's intention to keep the best service in the future in line with its current policies. The government needs best transportation zero fare for the local population on the 1st of May 2012 by removing the cap card system. In doing so, the government became the best city in the world to offer an entirely free bus service to its residents upon filling the ID card before traveling to Estonia in 2013. Many people are now moving in this direction, with Malta having just done so at the beginning of this month. Zero fare bus transportation takes all the right environmental boxes taken on speed to deliver the alternative mode of transport right into the hands of all residents. Every street will now be driven for not choosing to use the free bus service, but fare will not be one of those expenses.
Policy, the general party policy going into the future of the
federal now, is just as well as this legislature and remains. This is what we can only
answer as a government. We are not here to ask questions about it. Mr. Speaker, can I just thank the Minister? That was a welcome change. It was a step in the right direction. And on this side of the house, I think that's the first time I saw that. But the minister will see as I do that, but still, probably we need to invite people back. What can we do? What does he think we can do? Or what has he got plans to do? To persuade people, having had a feedback service for 10 years, people are still very eager not to use it. Or some people are that. But it doesn't appear to be as widely used as we would think, given that it's big.
I would like to see a massive impact on that service. I think what more can one do? You get a full back service?
The back route, very similar back route that we inherited, the route having changed back. The back of the change, I think this is a slowly over time trying to encourage people by making providing not like the elderly communities, but they were used by children, and they still have to work in terms of this before children were given to school. And in many cases, mom or dad would want to have in the car. It's becoming something special, and take my daughter, for example, who wants to get the bus, because it was a safe way to have friends over in the bus together, and I would get to school. So, that's something when it comes to other forms of encouragement. I mean, we need to develop improvements to make things greener, and tell people to walk more. I mean, most of our trips into the community can be done afoot. So, we could talk about why can't we have a bus after 9 o'clock at night? Well, the truth of the matter is, it's very easy to take up
1922, 35 patrols had been conducted by the Environmental Agency for dog fouling. 135 samples have been collected. 12 fines have been placed, 5 paid, and 7 passed for prosecution. 15 penalty notices have been issued for no action and registration. 3 of these were passed for prosecution as non-payment of fines. Furthermore, the Environmental Protection and Research Unit carried out patrols on our beaches 2 or 3 times daily, depending on the availability of officers, as well as on those of other duties at land and sea. 82 people have been warned for not having dog registrations in place. In relation to the trees, 121 trees have been felled in the past 24 months. Trees have been felled because they have perished, because the health and safety risk, or otherwise following DPC approval. In the case of Alaska, trees removed and then in the place at a ratio of 2 to 1. In relation to the polls that are conducted in relation to dog fouling and agenda, doesn't Mr. agree that we need to improve that particular statistic? We live in a small community, and of course, every part of Gibraltar is a direct window to every single tourist. It's different. I have worked back and forth, but I know statistical relation to fines, where 5 have been paid and there have been 12. Fines in relation to dog fouling, and still the problem persists. There's an honourable minister agreeing with me that we need to improve the number of affairs so that we can continue to prevent this very successful activity of people leaving their dog on our streets.
Thank you. Requires the government to come in some sort of
to try and tell the battle in line with the race exactly the back of the And I'm going to say,
could
we said this is in the land of the Red Book of the Constraints to have a historical role. It depends on when the agreement is finalized. There is then a lot of concept designed to be produced, and then those could be presented to the people for the start of the formal consultation process we're going to represent that. So I can't give them an exact timing until the negotiations have concluded.
Next question. Question number 391 of 2022. The area is well defined.
Concerns whether the government has considered listing privately owned buildings such as Fortress House under the Heritage and Antiquities Act, and if the conclusion was that they should not be listed, why not?
Answer: the idea of the Minister for the Environment and Education.
Speaker, the Heritage and Antiquities Council has discussed the listing of private properties on several occasions. Indeed, the Heritage and Antiquities Act of 2018 expressed to a visible that is the listing table 2 of privately owned buildings under section 16.4e and 17.3. We are currently in discussion with a number of landlords whose properties we are considering adding to the table. Specifically looking to Fortress House with a piece of the best in the subject of liquidation, and I think it's already been sold or has been sold. And is it just, and for the negotiations, will the discussions include Fortress House?
The discussions so far have not included Fortress House. There have been discussions with the proposed developers of Fortress House in relation to their carbon planning application. And there is another meeting which we are setting up within the next couple of weeks in which we will test a number of issues which would include it.
If you're able to state how many properties we received advice in relation to, and if I'm slightly cheeky, which properties is he looking at?
And speaker, I think it would be fair with the language, although the act gives me the power to include in the table without necessarily having the consent of the language. I think it is good form to engage with the language and to try and get agreement, even though agreement is not necessary. This happens when we were setting up RAP and we in fact discuss the taking the record with the relevant denominations and their acceptance, and the best it was not necessary. But I don't think it's fair to give them any. I think we are talking from memory, maybe half a dozen, 6 or 7, as the initial list of private properties that we are in discussion with landlords and elsewhere.
Just to give you a better sense of what the minister's thinking in relation is in relation to this, of the half a dozen that he's considering, is it possible that we may consider proceeding to enforce even without the landlord's consent.
There's a range of views. And some of the people who are very new in Gibraltar tend to feel that even though they have no intention of damaging their property from a heritage perspective, they tend to feel that it will perhaps provide some constraints as to what they can do, and they're worried about the value of the property. However, the second in the UK has said that this provision does not increase in value and don't decrease. And that is the kind of conversation we're having. But as a very value for those who are keen, to those who are less keen, if there are private properties or places within private properties that are built and then advanced government antiquities also were under threat, I think my duty to the heritage of the data would be such that I might be obliged to consider this to them with or without the language consent. I don't think it would appear to that because that's not the most of the conversations we're having.
Just in this issue, I was wondering, is there a common theme to this sort of bag of 67 properties? Is it, for example, that they are all in a particular zone of importance, the place of importance, or are they because classified because of their age, even though they're on diverse parts of Gibraltar? Or is it because there's been a sort of singular assessment of their own integral value in heritage space? I don't mean value in quantities.
I'm not very careful because I don't want to say anything that might identify the language in question. There are significant differences in the old part of the project where, in some cases, there have already been recent restorations which have been very sympathetic to heritage. And where I think that the landlord is particularly sympathetic to heritage, and therefore the conversation will be an easy conversation to have. I think it's important that we should list the schedule, the first group, and then use that to encourage others to come along and put things forward. Because I was going to ask that question, whether, in terms of scope focus in relation to this, whether this was like you know, the first step that we did, considering that the only background I already had was I am indeed the council advising him to list a lot of that when this process was completed.
But it's bigger, and
eventually, the link of the first two services came within the first, and I aware. At the National Gallery making the set of the Saturday Night Live for Science this morning. And we were admiring the work of Rudy Fingerenda, who commanded some of the very parts of Tavern. And that's what the third thing that encouraged us, and with a particular possibility to try and ensure that we keep the look. And I say that from my point of view, we need to have a few listed buildings that would tell landlords that they have everything to gain and nothing to lose, and that others would then come in much more quickly and much more easily. And I think it would be good for the world and for the future of the world of heritage.
Thank you, Speaker. I really appreciate it. Can I urge the Minister to actually be more ambitious in relation to this? And at the end of the day, saying that yes, more ambitious in relation to this. At the end of the day, a little bit of a cop-out if you really want to preserve heritage in Gibraltar. I think that is heritage worth preserving. But of course, all of us who are in government or indeed are responsible opposition, we've got to grasp the metal. And so, well, look, we've got to prepare these buildings and lift them. I mean, it's actually not unusual in other parts in Europe and in the UK. It's obviously the system that applies there. The listing of properties in Grade 1, all the way to Grade 1 there, Grade 2, etc. So, could I urge the minister to be
to be more optimistic about it, more ambitious about it. And I have to say, that, you know, I live in a historic house myself. If I were no problem, no problem at all in this respect. At all. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful way of preserving heritage in the book.
That they're not, 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 that they're
the brilliance of this entire discussion is introspective, but it was very bad to bear, and not in the difference in our priorities as parties.
Mr. Speaker, in 2017-18, the government assessed that there were about 1,500 people in Gibraltar that were classified as special needs in different ways. The trends in Gibraltar, and indeed worldwide, but particularly in Gibraltar, have been that there have been people that require greater special needs and greater assistance and so on. When the project for St. Martin's World was conceived, there's no leeway built into the project so that they could deal with issues of capacity going forward. Was there no assessment of capacity projected?
Let us look at the full involvement of the staff and the background of the person we are and was projected for an increase in size based on the annual increase for the on the table.
and it's in Copperfield, and then the total of the 127, where I could not understand the point of that, where the member can go and check those statistics, and then we need an ending. But then we also need updating, and I would encourage you as a member to update that, because there hasn't been an updated table on the number of people who certainly need for an academic year beyond 2017-18, which is on the public website. But perhaps you as a member can do that. Can I just ask you, on this issue, so that I can understand the point a bit more, to say that I was doing a technical basis, that some people are going to need more consent or considering to do some classes of site. Have you identified those locations? And is it on the basis that there will then be, not that I captured the entire answer to the original, that there will be work at the current site of St. Martin's to make it greater capacity? I thought I would say first of all, I don't know if the figure that I have been given by the department. I just wonder whether those figures might include the learning support facilities in some of the other schools. I would have to check that for the speaker. Regarding the alternative, the idea is that the early birth nursery might move up south. So that was the case, and if we do that, there will be no need for that at the current site, because it will be at least the classroom that we need to accommodate the children who are not in the nursery. And if we do that site, we are looking at various better and not at liberty to discuss that work as we are considering the connection. I'm grateful for that. But I will say to him, and then his satisfaction that it must be that it includes the numbers of people in other schools, I can tell him that staring at the table, there are plenty of numbers for all the other schools. So it does not seem to me that it must be the answer, but by all means, if the only one that can check that, it would be helpful to have that. In terms of the early birds moving at night, again, I ask the same question, is there been an identification of specific places for early birds? Not yet. Or any time scale of when that could happen to alleviate the capacity issues, because if, as a random member says, there has been some unpredictability about it, presumably the capacity issues may be worsened next year, so it would be important to act quickly. Actually, I would urge you to do that, and perhaps you can give us some input on that. And can I ask, having the government being surprised by what he says is the unpredictability of it, how soon is his development now engaged to expect advice on a projection back to the future? Because I don't think earlier that we have not yet firmly identified the fact that is one of the questions. The projection of the future, how does the way of external experts can be predicted, the increase that they have of the country, and I rely on the growth expertise that I have within the department and within the medical school for the best. And as to when, we will work from September to September, so we will have to be ready in September, when the term starts, to deal with the number of children who we would have to have as learning disabilities who we would have to cater for after that. This is a very
given another people.
Okay, like in terms of predictability, I'm talking about September. Is the department able to have an idea of how many people are the children at that age when they access early birth nursery? You will know a good 5, 6, 7, 8 months beforehand that your child is to access that type of facility. Does that have an idea of how many children he's expecting to receive in the
the dynamic into the space, and within the next few months, we will already have an idea. And I think that it is likely that the levels will continue at that higher level rather than the old lower level of 6-7-8. Which is consistent for many years, that's the thing about it. But we will be aware and we will be ready. We owe it to the children and to the families. And this is also on which I will address the urge. This is a completely different level. Commitment, and we will be absolutely there for them.
Thank you. The final question is to speak on some very one statistical piece of information which I would be very interested in about the error of general comments. This is from the family on the record about this has been having huge impact going into the future. It is done that if you go to 25, then the brain will do well and those 19 others cope well, many of them will not. I will need access to the second photograph of the license, which is from Belgium. I know that the insert last year was big, when you're looking at those numbers, you're going to have a major impact. But the specific question I've been asking, Mr. Speaker, is of the 109, as it's still going to need to check, of the current cohort in St. Martin, which I assume includes everybody's nursery, how many are, if you can take a snapshot, you had an insert last September 25, how many are currently in everybody's nursery today? It's a preschool year, so we'll be incompetent to it for years at least.
Mr. Speaker, currently in Edinburgh, total we have 31. We had 31 last year and 28 the year before.
This is something that we have to deal with as a community. I think that we have to deal with it as a community, and it's something that we should work on without trying to score political points for that matter.
Agreed, Mr. Speaker, and this is going to be an unfair question in the sense that I'm sure you're going to have the information, but this is an idea at least of what the main condition is. Is it many children within the LSD spectrum, or is it other issues? I'm sure you don't have that information, but we have a flavor of what conditions of treatment children are requiring special assistance for.
I don't have that information. It's something that we work together with the Ministry of Equality, with the Care Agency, and so on. But I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, that there are children who start in early birth nursery and then continue nursery. And so we don't necessarily have to assume that we will require them as a lesson. Increasingly, with the level of support facilities that we have in our schools, we are able to look after children in mainstream much more, and something that we are able to do. But I don't have the answer to that at each time, I'm afraid.
Question number 384 of 2022. The annual case of the family.
Are there unqualified persons teaching subjects in government schools, and if so, in what subject schools are there references?
I think the annual of the Minister for the Environment and Education. The speaker, all persons teaching subjects in government schools are suitably qualified.
Speaker, what does this mean by adding the word suitably before qualified?
That the qualification is suitable, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, let me ask you in this way. Are they qualified teachers?
Mr. Speaker, has that been the question, or is it still in the answer? All the teachers are qualified teachers. There are also instructors who are qualified in the subject and work under the supervision of a teacher. And this is a process that is widespread throughout education, largely in connection with music, where you can have specialist instructors who teach particular instruments under the supervision of their qualified music teacher.
Mr. Speaker, I hope that the Honourable Member
was floating the wrong body and not trying to play word games with him. I thought that my question was clear, you know, fine, we can pick on, we can pick on words, and that's in point two. The Honourable Member has given an example. Are there other examples in other subjects and in what grew, and on the web basis, which is what I had asked, which was my original intention. Okay. I think it's just the music. I would like to check that. I don't believe we have to stop for other than the music, because remember that music, you can record it by teacher, but you don't have to be specific. In an instrument, in vocal, for everything like that, and everything else, there is a long record of music instructors, always under the supervision of a teacher, doing classes in that specialized area. But whenever it's happening, as I understand the explanation is given, whenever it's happening, it's always under the supervision of a qualified teacher. A qualified teacher qualified in the particular subject in which the instructor is instructing. Is a teacher qualified as a music teacher? Although we could have, I believe in one of the schools we have drama and music together, so it could be the drama and it could be a relevant subject. That doesn't mean that teacher is present in every circumstance, because the instructor may have two trumpet players who he or she takes into a studio and that's working on the campus, another instructor may be working on the piano, and the teacher supervises in general, but may not be in the room at that particular time. But the instructor and the qualified in the instrument of the society, and the instruction is supervised by the teacher. And I have also gotten an acceptable examination class to the awarding body. And we have to say that PSR, the LPA, or whatever, would accept the qualifications of those that are instructing. And that actually before is completely covered. We wouldn't have any other way. And in relation to, if the matter of a qualified teacher that is sort of responsible, let me use responsible because I don't want to use the word supervision because I used it in my supplementary, but the Honourable Member in his explanation has explained that they're not necessarily present at every single moment. The qualified teacher is responsible for this happening, that the instructors there. Obviously, teachers are professionals, and those are subject to their contraceptive and so on. But how, therefore, in relation to what code of practice is the supervisor inspecting? Is there, who is responsible for that situation? Because there are external people. They're not government employees, as I understand it. With expensive standards and the basis of identical, but no identical to those of the teachers. Presumably there's monitoring of that going on by statute. The team and the senior leadership team in the school are responsible for the professional behavior and the standards of the staff improving their effectiveness. Absolutely. Next question. Question number 385 of 2022. The Honourable Leader of the Opposition. The government's understanding of the strength of the Senate is not sent. Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment and Education. The Speaker, I would like to have a question to get away with question 386. Question number 386 of 2022. The Honourable, the Leader of the Opposition. The Speaker, what works of the Senate have been undertaken by private contractors in the financial year 2019 to 2021 and 2021 to 2022, and by which contractor and at what cost, providing in each case a description of the work undertaken. agriculture, the problem of the Minister for the Environment and Education.
you know, people come to see you and they tell you something, and then when you put it to the government, you get the answer that that is not accurate. But certainly I've seen it for myself in the photograph. What I've seen is broken tombs, the dumping of rubbish, pending issues, some of the pending broken, cement dumping, broken tiles, piping and rubbish or bricks, with cement next to, dumps next to graves. Pretty disrespectful practices when a family member is going to the cemetery. That's the idea that those things are unacceptable, and to the extent that they are formalizing procedures for the application for certain practices, that the government needs to go beyond that and then monitor how those works happen with whatever staff they have there on site, so that these pretty disrespectful practices don't go on at the cemetery.